sweat technique.
You found the killer bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
November 30th, the rivalry is renewed as Texas A&M faces off against the... Who wrote this script? Faces off against the University of Texas at Kyle Field. Stay tuned to ESPN 97.5, 92.5 for extensive coverage of this historic game presented by Rebecca Creek Distillery. You'll hear great interviews, great guests from both sides, spirited conversation from all of our hosts. Going to have great guests on next week. Also connect to our coverage on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and social media. Enjoy Rebecca Creek Whiskey, Enchanted Rock Vodka, and Texas Ranger Whiskey to celebrate the rivalry's return. Gig 'em and hook 'em. It's hard for me to say. Sorry for me to say gig 'em and hook 'em in the same sentence. Can you say gig 'em, Brian, as a hook 'em fan?
Gig 'em.
Yeah. He's a pro.
He's tough.
He's a pro.
You can separate the word from the actual meaning. 713-780-ESPN. HRP, listen to it. But next week will be fun. We're going to have great guests throughout the entire week. Should D'Amico Ryans rest Will Anderson one more week? This is the old Dusty Baker move. He did it with Nico Collins 2 weeks ago. I believe that Nico Collins could have played 2 games ago against Detroit. Hamstring, soft tissue injury. Second time that Nico Collins has dealt with a hamstring this year, maybe the same one. Didn't want to risk it. Let's play him 30 snaps against the Cowboys, ease him back into things, knowing we need him in December. Hopefully January. Maybe February. Should they do the same with Will Anderson? Should they give him the old Dusty Baker?
I think they should. I think that when you start looking at what we've talked about, even with like trends and which way that D'Amico goes on going forward on fourth down or other things where he makes decisions, I think that, you kind of set the trend for yourself of, like you mentioned, if you're not going to play Nico against Detroit, you're going to give him that one extra week, make sure he's totally healthy. I think that matters. I think you take a lot into consideration. You take into consideration who you're playing. Tennessee is kind of a lesser than opponent. It's not as big of an opponent, but, we talked about if it was a bigger opponent, would he try and push it a little bit more in the case of Nico? I think Will just goes at one speed no matter what. So to keep him out of the way of himself, it's fine that you're playing a team you should beat, that you can give him the rest for that matter, for that reason. And then more so than that, the way that the rest of your defensive linemen and your edge defensive linemen played last week, Barnett got the strip sack that he caused the fumble, then ended up getting it and running it into the end zone. He was active. Autry was all over the field. Danielle Hunter was all over the field. The interior line has been playing well to where even if he doesn't play, they played so well last week, they could do the same thing against Tennessee, and there's nothing lost while Will Anderson guarantees you that he gets healthy for the following game.
Now, D'Amico Autry is not practiced yet this week. He's dealing with a knee oblique. You're not worried about that?
No, I'm not, because normally with the veterans during the week, they don't care as much about their practice time.
Yeah, but they usually don't create injuries. They just say, like, rest or non-injury related.
Sometimes they'll tell you, if they dinged it in a game or something like that. But at the same time, you expect by Sunday. I firmly expect by Sunday he'll play.
I think there's a better chance Will Anderson plays than D'Amico Autry plays.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Autry wants to play against his old team. I think that the way he played last week, I know he went down in that game, but came back and was extremely effective after that. And I believe got the sack after he went down.
Yeah.
I believe he's going to play.
I think there's a difference between ankle and hamstring. To me, like the chances of re-aggravation are much higher with a hamstring than are an ankle. So that to me is the difference here. Like, I'm cool doing it with Nico. And look, if they ultimately decide, hey, we're going to keep Will Anderson out one more week against Tennessee because we need him ready for December, cool, fine. I don't care that much. Totally understand playing the long game with one of your better defensive players. But I'm not as concerned about an ankle as I am a hamstring, although Will Anderson has had 3 ankle injuries in his short 2-year career as a professional for the Houston Texans. And I also get the sense that that he's going to play. Like when D'Amico Ryans is asked about Will Anderson, usually when he's asked about injuries, we'll see where he lands at the end of the week. He gives you a complete nothing burger. He's talking like he's back. Like he's talking like Anderson is already back. Matt Burke talked today, defensive coordinator. He's talking like he is back. So I'm okay with them not going the one extra game with Will Anderson, specifically because of the injury. If it was a hamstring, yes, absolutely. One more week for Will Anderson. But with an ankle, I'm not as concerned. I will say this, though. I think he's going to be limited, kind of like Nico was. Nico only played 30 snaps in his first game back. I think Will Anderson is going to be somewhere in that ballpark, too.
I think the other thing that you mentioned, if it is true, and if Autry doesn't play, then there's a more likelihood that they would like Will Anderson to be able to play, because now at least you have other guys you can go to, another guy you can go to for depth as you continue to do what you like to do, which is rotate those ends, you know, to keep them all fresh. Mm-hmm. So I think that would factor in as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, their depth would take a hit if they didn't have Autry. You still have guys that you feel like are capable, right? Like, Danielle Hunter obviously is very good, leads the NFL in pressures. They like Barnett. Barnett had the big play against Dallas. He had the strip sack, fumble recovery, scoop and score. And then, look, I think Dylan Horton's been playing some pretty good football, too. Like, that's been a fun story to watch develop. So I still think they would have enough pieces, even if Autry couldn't play, and then Will Anderson only gave you 30 snaps or whatever it was. Do you feel like people are underestimating the Titans a little bit? Like you said, a lesser than. 8341 texting in saying, resting one more week. It's a Titans game we're playing. Give me one more week to heal up, getting 100%, moving to the month of December. Are we selling the Titans a little short?
I mean, I think we did the same thing with the Cowboys. I think the expectation was the Cowboys are a better team than the Titans.
I don't know that they are.
And that's the thing. I don't know if they are or not, but I think that with what we were talking about, what we heard from the narrative being going into that game, it seemed like everybody with anticipation towards this game was basically saying the same thing. You're supposed to blow the doors off the Cowboys, and they're not a very good football team. And if you're saying that about the Cowboys, then I think it's fair to say it about the Tennessee Titans as well, because aside from a really staunch defense, because they got veterans sprinkled throughout there, they've got a defensive line with a couple of anchors on it that can really do some things. But other than that, I don't think you fear their offense. I don't think you look at them and say they've got some really big impact skill position players. I think you can get by with beating the Titans the same way you beat the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the Titans are better than the Cowboys, though.
It's quite possible.
Because
especially
the Cowboys,
with Dak out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah. Dak being out, I don't think that their offense is very good. Their defense is flat out quit, in my opinion. Tennessee's still, like, inspired. Like, Tennessee's still fighting. Like, Tennessee still has young guys, especially offensively, that they're, like, trying to get better. Like, they're trying to establish themselves as professionals in the NFL. And then defensively, they quite frankly have one of the better defenses in the NFL. They're second in NFL total defense.
I think that's
second.
That's where I was going to go. In the fact that in a lost season, in a wins and loss perspective, although some kind of not-so-smart-thinking guys on that team still seem to think that they have a chance to make the playoffs, but I think that their defense with all those veterans would like to say, even if it's a lost season for the team in the win and loss column, we could end up with the best defensive rating in the league, and that's probably means something to a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Whereas you're right, it's an open audition on offense. You're trying to see a lot of young players, what they can do. I mean, Tony Pollard hasn't done much since they spent the money to go get him in free agency.
He's been okay.
But you're trying to find out what you really have on offense getting ready for the offseason.
I think the big question with them is Will Levis going to be their quarterback next year? I think that's what they're trying to figure out and learn. And Levis, since his return from the injury, has actually been better. Like, good enough? Probably not. But he's been better than he was prior. He was joking yesterday. He's like, hey, what have you done since you've returned from injuries? Well, I'm not making chest passes and underhand throws anymore, which is funny. But their defense, too, I think their strengths line up to your weaknesses. Like, your offensive line, not good. Their defensive line, really good. Mm-hmm. Strength versus weakness is something that also is like, don't feel too great about that.
No, you're right. I think that we looked at it. I mean, it's the same way as looking at when you had Kenyon Green and then you looked at Quinnen Williams and went, oh, my goodness, that's not the matchup you really want that they're going to actually exploit. And I think you're right. To the same level, the offensive line, as much as it struggled, even if it looked a little better last week, you don't think that you're going to take some savvy, tough, really big mountain of men type defensive linemen that are athletic and think that they're not going to try and have their way with the interior defensive linemen?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough challenge. It is going to be a tough challenge. Junior Bronco says, nope, get these wins while you can. Run the score up on Amy. A lot of people want to do that. I watched the Brian Callahan meeting with the press conference or meeting with the media during his press conference yesterday. He's wearing the old Oiler hat. He's wearing the Oiler hat during Texan week, which is no surprise. Text from the Hive, but the Texans are going to crush down the Titans defense, and they're going to give up just like the Cowboys did. Let's see about that. Let's see how good this offense looks against a Titans defense that is the number two defense in the NFL in total yards versus a Cowboys defense who is not good and has flat out quit.
I think that's the big thing when we were talking about, you know, put a couple of weeks together, like two or three weeks in a row where you look and see progress. Well, you beat a bad Dallas Cowboys team, and defensively, like you mentioned, they're lesser than. Now take it to the next level. Keep doing what you were able to do against Dallas, but do it against a defense that's at least a step above what Dallas has put up against you. And then you keep doing it 2 weeks in a row, and that's the next step that you take. Now you're going to be more convincing in terms of people believing you are actually figuring some stuff out.
Alex says take the under. Move over, Lee Sterling. Alex is in the house. Alex, his play is lock in, what is it? What is November? What's a good riddle for betting in November?
Lee calls it Dovember.
Does he really?
Yeah.
He calls it Dovember?
Yeah.
Well, Alex's own Dovember.
We went from Locktober to Dovember.
I thought that was just your stupid joke.
I didn't make that up.
No, Lee said that on the show every week.
Oh, I thought you typed it in there. It's like, this is...
No.
I thought that was you.
No, didn't you type... I think you might have typed it. Or no, did I ask? Okay.
So it was typed in there. I thought that
Then I must have asked
I thought it was your joke.
That's no, but Lee said joke. It on the show every week.
The over-under is 40.5. Tennessee Titans, Houston Texans. I played my bets today, just getting out ahead of things. I did not play either side of this game. I didn't play the number, Texans minus 7.5. I didn't play the over under 40.5. I had the Texans winning by 7.
Yeah, I could see the Texans scoring over 20 points.
I had 24-17.
I don't think the Tennessee gets over 20 points.
24-17 is where I got it. I might as well be the handicapper. Like, it's 7 points. It's 41 points on the total. It's 7.5 in the spread, 40.5 for the total. Look at that.
So you basically just play the line exactly as Vegas
put
it?
I didn't know what the line was.
Okay.
Branhametrics.
Branham Computer Models, Branham Analytics, they do the score.
That's your semester as a math major?
I do the score before I ever look at the spread and the over, under, the total.
That was what I called it last year.
Because I don't want that to influence. Yeah, Branhametrics.
Branhalytics.
Branhalytics? Yeah, I don't like how you're taking out the
spread. I know analytics has those things out there.
I feel like whenever you look at the spread and you look at the total, though, it influences your prediction on the game. So I try to avoid that before the prediction on the game.
Yeah, because I think when we do BZ Money, I always kind of have in my head without looking at the spreads, like, I feel like this is a pick'em, or I feel like this is a touchdown game, but if you're going to double digits, it might be too much.
Yeah, I go in there and I predict every score of every game before I even look at the total and before I look at the against spread. Now, Branham on the year is 40-31 against the spread this year.
Totals
23-27, though. Not great here. And I was awful last week. I was 1-4 against the spread. I was 0-4 in the totals. So Branham had his worst week.
Not November for you last week?
Week 11 was torture for your boy. All right, Adam Ronis, he's gonna get you straightened away with your fantasy football. All the fantasy football questions you need to know heading into this weekend. And also his Dub Club, where he's killing it as well. Adam Ronis joins us next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at telling you exactly how he can help you to get your hair loss problem rectified. It could be as easy as simply basically getting some PRP treatments that kind of get the blood flowing and fertilize the hair that you still have in your head to get it thicker, stronger, longer, and make a difference in your overall appearance. But if your hair is too far gone and you've got those bald spots, he can actually take the hair that you have on the sides and the back of your head, repurpose it where you need it, and in no time at all, you will have hair. It'll be growing. It'll be stronger, longer, the same color, growing the same direction, and it'll be with you for the rest of your life. Because what I found out in having a consultation with Doc and his staff is you never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So he takes some of that, puts it where you need it most, and in no time at all, you see that it is absolutely what you need to rectify the problem. And because he takes it from a place where it's never going to go away, up to 99% of the follicles that he moves are going to be with you for the rest of your life. Game-changing information for those that would really like to keep their hair and make sure that it stays. That's why I encourage you to go to 975hair.com right now. Because if you go to 975hair.com and you sign up for an appointment with Doc and his staff, you get it for free. If you go and walk in off the street and ask for the appointment, it's $150. You go to 975hair.com and sign up for the appointment, it's free. They're going to explain the PRP treatments, which is the fertilizing of the follicles you have, and the NeoGraft procedure, which is the replanting of the hair for your scalp. Either one of them is effective. He'll tell you which one you need. Maybe you need both like me, but at the end of the day, you're going to find out the main thing is that whatever he does works, and you get your hair back, and it's fantastic. That's why I encourage you to go there. Go get that free consultation right now. Go to 975hair.com and sign up for that consultation. Nothing out of pocket, no commitment to be made, no money to spend or to basically anything that says you have to commit. Just a question and answer session after they explain everything to you for you to consider if it's something you want to do. I did it. Couldn't be happier with it. You should too. Tell them I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Adam Ronis joining us on the HR&P guest line. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. Adam Ronis, of course, on Twitter, at Adam Ronis, from The Fantasy Life on Sirius XM. It is the Tribal Chief of the Dub Club. Adam, what about tonight's game?
Hey, acknowledge me.
How are you feeling about tonight's game? Is there a strong lean you feel one way or another?
I worry about this game for the Steelers because this is usually a spot where the Steelers disappoint. They've had a great year so far, coming off a big victory over Baltimore. We know that they're better than Cleveland, but it's a divisional game on the road. I could see this being a letdown spot for Pittsburgh. Of course, the weather looks like it could be somewhat of an issue, though I'm seeing reports that it could get better, that it might be more rain, and the winds don't look too bad. Because that's really what you worry about, is heavy winds, because that affects the passing game, the deep passing game, the kickers. So I think that this game is going to be closer than people think.
Adam, from a start-sit perspective, we've got a lot of injuries that are got a lot of owners a little bit concerned. Several tight ends, Jake Ferguson, David Njoku, and George Kittle, and even a quarterback in Brock Purdy. How do you see some of these key injuries? Which way you think they're leaning?
The Purdy one is starting to concern me because there was a report saying that he threw early and then left and went to the training room. So this is an issue, a sore right shoulder. I'm a little worried about him right now. Kittle said he's going to play. You can never trust players what they say, but I feel good about him playing. Ferguson, I don't think plays. We've seen this with concussions, and he had it on a Monday night. We've seen players on Sunday not be able to return for the following Sunday. We've even seen players on a Thursday night, which was Malik Nabers, and then missed multiple weeks. So with Jake Ferguson, definitely don't feel good about it. I think he sits. And the other guy that you got to worry a little bit about is Devontae Smith. He missed practice again today with a hamstring injury. And sounds like Sam LaPorta is going to go. He put in a full practice today.
Adam Ronis joining us here on the Killer Bees. Adam, J.K. Dobbins was an exciting find for fantasy managers who drafted him in the late rounds. But it seems like his efficiency is starting to drop a little bit. Gus Edwards has been added back into the offense coming off of injury. And even Haskins was getting several goal line carries last week for the Chargers. Are you worried at all about Dobbins going forward into the fantasy playoffs?
Yeah, I think you have to be. I mean, you hit on a lot of the points. It's just the efficiency's gone down, and he's been an amazing story. I know he's shooting for that comeback player of the year, and I think everyone is rooting for him, but he just hasn't been as good lately, and we have seen Gus Edwards enter the mix now that he's back and healthy again. And Dobbins, he saved his day with that touchdown run at the end of the game, and it still only gave him 56 yards for the game. So the volume that we were seeing earlier in the year, it's going to decline a little bit. I also think if you look at the Chargers' schedule coming up, they're going to pass more. We started to see it last week. Like, Justin Herbert hasn't been a great fantasy quarterback for most of the year, and it's not based on his talent. It's just the way that the team has played. Harbaugh has come in there with a run-first mentality, but they have a schedule coming up where they're going to have to pass. It started last week with Cincinnati. We all do. Like, they weren't going to stop Cincinnati, and it was going to be a game where Herbert had to pass. He was phenomenal in the first half, wasn't as good in the second half, but he's also running a little bit. So I do see it shifting a little bit where they're going to rely more on Herbert with some of the games coming up, beginning this week against Baltimore, because I don't see them slowing down Baltimore. And in order for them to stay competitive, they're going to have to pass, because we all know Baltimore is much stronger against the run and one of the worst teams against the pass.
Adam, how are you looking at this Kansas City running back situation, which has been fluid really all year long? I remember when they claimed Samaje Perine. Oh, he's a guy to pick up in PPR. Pacheco was a popular name early, obviously. He got hurt. Carson Still. And then now, of course, it's been Kareem Hunt. Pacheco is going to be back soon. Maybe not this week, but soon. How are you handling the Chief running back situation?
As long as Pacheco is out, it's Kareem Hunt, and he's just been getting massive volume. Has he been great? No, he's not. He's not efficient, but any running back that's getting 20-plus touches a game and a good offense, they're going to be productive, and we've seen it with Kareem Hunt. Now, he is very reliant on touchdowns, which he was getting every week until the last two. 2 weeks ago, he made up for it with 7 receptions for 65 yards. Last week, he had no receptions, which was kind of surprising in a game that they trailed a little bit. There is a chance Pacheco suits up this week. I mean, I don't expect Kansas City to rush him back. There's no need to. They're still in good shape for the one seed. But now, losing a Buffalo, it does make it a little bit more interesting. When Pacheco does return, it'll probably be a split, which is going to hurt Kareem Hunt. Pacheco is the better running back. I mean, there's no doubt. I'm just upset because you see these numbers that Kareem Hunt's putting up. Imagine if that was Isaiah Pacheco healthy, because I thought Pacheco was in line for a massive year this year because of the way they upgraded the offense and with them probably leaning on him as the main back. They don't need to do it down the stretch because their ultimate goal is be healthy for January and for that Super Bowl run. So I don't see them bringing Pacheco in and giving him 15 touches immediately. They have the luxury of kind of splitting with these two, which is not ideal for fantasy. But if Pacheco were to play this week, it's Carolina. And I think actually both running backs can be productive because you have to remember, we have six teams on bye this week. There's not a lot of situations where you're going to say, oh, yeah, I can sit this guy. When you start looking at your lineups, especially if you're in a deeper competitive league, you kind of have no choices. You're going to have to submit a lineup that makes you feel very uncomfortable this week.
Adam, I'm looking at wide receiver Mike Evans. Been out 4 weeks with that hamstring injury. He's back practicing. We know that, but we also know that doesn't guarantee he's going to play, and if he does, he might be limited. How are you looking at that situation?
No, if he's active, you're playing him. I mean, again, a lot of it has to do with the bye week issues, but again, if they deem him healthy enough to go, you're going to play him. Now, you could say, well, Nico Collins last week, but Nico Collins had a touchdown for the first play, and it was called back due to penalty, and then you know, he was a little limited early on, but then he played a good amount of snaps. They just didn't really pass the ball effectively in that one. But they need Mike Evans, and Tampa Bay is still in the divisional hunt for the title. I mean, with Atlanta losing last week, you know, Atlanta's 6-5, Tampa's 4-6, Atlanta's off this week. So Tampa wins this week, they're a game out. Now, they have lost to Atlanta twice, so that obviously hurts, but they're still in it. So Mike Evans, he's out there, he's in your lineup.
Adam Ronis joining us on the Killer Bees. Adam, looking at Jaylen Waddle, someone who's been massively disappointing to fantasy managers this year. He started the year with a wide receiver 16 finish in PPR leagues with Tua there, but since then in PPR formats has finished no higher than wide receiver 39. It feels like a full drop at this point with the way the Dolphins have adjusted their offense to more of a dink and dunk system and not taking the shots deep. Where are you at with Waddle and the Dolphins offense overall?
It's so disappointing. Even with Tua back, you figure, all right, here we go. Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle, they're going to take off. It has not happened. It's been it's Jonnu Smith and Devon Achane. Now, if you have Achane, you're loving it. If you've been picking up Jonnu Smith and playing him last few weeks, you love it. But even Tyreek Hill, in six games with Tua, his target share is 20.9%. It was over 30% last year. Waddle is even worse. So I have him in a league where it's 20 roster spots, so I can't drop him because there's nothing great on waivers. That's the other thing. The waiver wire has been awful this year, especially in the deeper formats. You know, we were going over it this week on one of our shows. It just hasn't been a significant pickup compared to years past. But Waddle is a guy that it's really difficult to start right now. I can't blame anyone for leaving him on the bench because we were waiting for him, especially with Tua coming back. It just hasn't happened. I mean, two catches for 37 yards last week. Even a game against the Rams, he had 55 yards in the first quarter. He finished with 57. So he hasn't had more than six targets in a game in the last five. So it's just not happening for Waddle. And even Tyreek Hill, like, you're playing Hill, but a lot of people drafted him in the top five, and he hasn't come close to that. Yes, Tua missed games, but even with Tua back, there just seems like they're trying to get the ball out of his hands quicker, which makes sense. You know, you don't want him to get hit, but it's really Devon Achane and Jonnu Smith who have been benefiting the most in this offense.
Adam, I guess outside of Bo Nix, you just can't trust anybody in Denver, huh?
Courtland Sutton. I think you could trust Courtland Sutton. He's been pretty good. He had that one game, I think it was on a Thursday night, if I'm not mistaken. He had no targets, and we were probably like, oh, here we go. And then ever since then, he's been really good. Last week, even 7 for 78. He has at least 8 targets in every game since that game. It was against the Saints on a Thursday night where he had no targets. Now, you're probably referring to the running game more specifically, and yes, because a lot of people picked up Audric Estime last week thinking he could be the lead back after he had double-digit touches the week before, and then it was Javonte Williams early, and he came out. They've been saying hot hand, which we hate as fantasy players. I am starting Javonte Williams in one league, but I'm probably going to get burned because the week he had one touch, I started him. Last week, I benched him. he had a good game, and you know how it's going to go this week. Yeah. But if you're going to go with anyone, it's probably Javonte Williams. But, you know, what if Williams comes out early, gets a couple carries, doesn't do anything, they bring in SMA, he breaks off a 15-yard run, and then they roll with him. So that's the situation there with them. But, yeah, Sutton is a guy that I think you can trust. He's with the emergence of Bo Nix, Sutton has become more reliable.
Adam, DeAndre Swift maybe had one of his best weeks of the year last week, but now he's nursing a groin. They've got other opportunities in Chicago. Do you just stay away from the running backs, or do you just ride with Swift, assuming he's going to play?
Yeah, look, if Swift is a go, I'm going to play him. I also do think you can – there's going to be desperate situations this week with the six teams on bye. I think you can get Roshon Johnson in, because the one change we saw last week with the new offensive coordinator is we saw an expanded role for Roshon Johnson. We saw it early in the year, and then he kind of went away. But last week he had 10 carries, only 33 yards, but he had a touchdown, and he was being used near the goal line and in the red zone. And the touchdown Swift had was from outside the 20. So they are using Roshon Johnson. We'll see if the trend continues, but I could see certain scenarios where you have two or three running backs on bye that you're really digging deep, and you might have to get Roshon Johnson into your lineup. And of all the backup running backs, I think he's one of the ones that's more appealing, especially if he's going to stay involved in this offense and get goal line carries.
Adam Ronis joining us here from the Fantasy Life on Sirius XM. Adam, going into week 12, it's time, if your trade deadline hasn't passed, to start maybe looking at playoff schedules, maybe swapping a player for a better playoff schedule, or looking at picking up those defenses with really good matchups in the championship weeks of 15, 16, and 17. Who are some guys you'd look to target and some defenses you'd look to add that have favorable playoff schedules?
Tampa Bay, their schedule is ideal coming up, not only for their offense, but for their defense. Because if you look at their playoff schedule, the Chargers is a tough one, but then they get the Cowboys and the Panthers in championship weeks. And even before that, you know, starting this week, they get the Giants and Tommy DeVito. Then they get the Panthers again, the Raiders, the Chargers, Cowboys, and Panthers. That is a really good schedule for a defense if you're looking to stream. I know they haven't been a great defense this year, and you could pass against them, but for a defense that's not rostered in a lot of leagues, I know I picked them up in a league last night, and I intend to roll with them the rest of the way.
Adam, last time I checked, you were about 25-30 games above 500 with the Dub Club. How's the winning going, and how can our listeners find out more?
Yeah, last week NFL was a good week, was 4-1. NBA this week's been up and down. So now it's 89-65. That's between NFL and NBA. But yeah, you could follow me on Twitter, X, at Adam Ronis, Instagram, ARON88. I have links for the Dub Club in there. There's a free trial, so you can test it out. And if you guys want to message me on Twitter, at Adam Ronis, for those listening, I'll hook you up with a special discount.
There you go. Take advantage of that. Adam's been rolling. Appreciate the time, Adam.
Thanks a lot, guys, and enjoy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. Adam Ronis. You can find him on Twitter, at Adam Ronis. Take advantage of the Dub Club. He's been winning. Also the host from Fantasy Life on Sirius XM. Let's get to the worst takes of the week. What are the worst takes of the week? Bad Take Boulevard, 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, we know there's a lot of sports coming up on the horizon. There's a lot of opportunities for you to cash in. You just got done hearing from Adam before that. You heard from Lee Sterling. We're constantly trying to give you winners, and we're trying to let you have an opportunity to cash in. If you're looking for a place to do that, I encourage you to go to mybookie.ag. Mybookie.ag is the place you ought to be, because they take care of their listeners all across the board. They're always looking for ways to give you a chance to get better odds, more money in your account, and better chances to win. They've been in business for over a decade, so your money's not going anywhere when you put it in. When you put it in now, especially when you sign up for the first time, they're going to double your first deposit up to $1,000. That means if you put $100 in, they'll put $100 on top. Suddenly, $200 in your account means more money, which means more games you can bet on and more chances you can win. They also have referral bonuses if you get your friends to sign up. And when you're actually putting more money in your account, they have a bonus for that too. But you got to use our promo code to get any and all the bonuses. That promo code is BET975. When you use the promo code BET975, it opens the doors to those codes and so much more. It also enters you in a chance to be in the actual rewards program that they have called MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more that they are going to get you to different tiers of rewards and opportunities so that you can cash in. They are fantastic. They love the fact that you listen to us and you bet with them. So use our promo code any and every time you see a chance to do it at Bet975. Go today and do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag and use our promo code Bet975.
ESPN 97.5. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-ESPN. Did y'all see Keith Lee, that he's just that foodie influencer guy? He did a sushi one, and there was a parasite in the sushi, and he didn't realize it, and like he ate it, but he was fine. But people went to that place, and they got sick.
Oh no!
Yeah, people like his viewers saw it. Like something moving in your sushi, dude.
Eek.
It's gross. I've never. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's bad. All right, what are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-ESPN. Brian triggered my OCD with the Bad Take Boulevard stuff he posted today. Did you see all these pictures?
Oh yeah,
he took up like a sheet of on Google Docs.
Yeah,
he triggered my OCD.
Yeah,
there was a little bit, Brian.
Ones, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures. All right, first one, Micah Parsons talking about his Dallas Cowboy football team.
I'm gonna put this out there. We're a damn good football team. I know the scores ain't showing it,
yeah.
And I know obviously people feel like we got so many missing pieces, but I just truly believe like you almost gotta go to things like things that we messing up on. Like I think our defense is really turning things around. Like up until that last quarter when they got that touchdown defense, we only really gave up those two touchdowns in that first quarter. But other than that, we gave up 6 points in the other two quarters.
There you go.
You know, the score don't really show how good we actually are. And
it's the first time I've heard this.
It's a loser mentality there from Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
We only, you know, besides the two touchdowns we gave up in one quarter, we only gave up 60 next two. Well, okay, that's still 20 points in three quarters. That's not good. And you still gave up those two first quarter touchdowns. You can't just dismiss those like they didn't happen.
You know who prevents that stuff from happening? Really good football teams.
Yes.
Really good football teams prevent that bad fourth quarter. Really good football teams overcome some slippage. Really good football teams, maybe there's a mistake, but they're able to endure that and then rise above it and win football games. Like, in what world, in what logic? Where can you find anything that tells you they're a darn good football team?
Is what he called them.
Yeah, that's what
Where
I was talking about earlier when we were talking about him. Like, yeah, I mean, how delusional can you get when it's one thing to like not bash your teammates, but you think you're a really good football team and we've seen what you've put down on tape?
Yeah, I don't understand where he's. I mean, other than backing up his team because he's a representative of the team, I don't know where he sees that they're a really good football team, and that's why Micah Parsons, you made the list.
You just made the list.
All right, this one, Bears are going to sweep the Packers. What's all this about?
They lost the turnover battle to Houston and still won that game. They lose the turnover battle 3-0 to the Bears. They're not winning that game. And now with Caleb Williams, I'm saying it right now. Bears are going to sweep the Packers. Bears are going to sweep the Packers this year. It's time. I don't care that Matt LaFleur has never lost to this team. I don't care that the Bears are 0-8 in this decade. And they're 4-25 going back to the last decade. I don't care. All right? That the Packers have won 28 out of the last 32. I don't care. It's time. Caleb's good, and Jordan Love is flawed. Bears going to sweep the Packers.
This was a host from 670 The Score
in Chicago.
Yeah, they lost. They were close, though.
Yeah, probably should have won.
Chandler Parsons probably thinks it's a win. Or Micah Parsons, not Chandler.
They have a good football team.
Yeah, they lost by one, so that eliminates the chances of a Sweep.
Yes.
What is it, Spakes?
Is that Joe George?
Spakes.
Spakes. He kinda
yeah,
looks,
Spakes.
He kind of looks alike a little bit. A little bit. Like an older version of Joe?
I don't think he looks that much like Joe.
Spies, you make the list.
You just made the list.
Paul Pierce, Dalton Connect's been playing really good for the Lakers. Here was Paul Pierce after the Lakers drafted Dalton Connect. And there's more than one bad take here, Paul Pierce.
Yeah, I mean, I like the pick. But you got to understand, like, translating to what he did at Tennessee to what you got to do for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah.
You go from a small-time school to the Lakers. Yeah. Mm. That's hard to be somebody who I'm thinking going to contribute. And not only is the Lakers, you got to play with LeBron. So you got to ask yourself, how much can this guy contribute right away? Yeah, he's a little older, a little more mature. I like it. But for me, I think this is a good opportunity for the Lakers to explore another trade, possibly for a superstar if they can package him.
Okay, so... First one is like bashing the pick because Dalton Connect's been pretty good. I mean, he had the huge game and people were like, oh, he's awesome. But I mean, he had 37, he had 27 the night before, getting extended minutes now. The dude's really fitting
in. His fourth quarter the other night was ridiculous.
And his shooting, his 3-point shooting's at 46%. Like, it's unbelievable. He calls Tennessee a small-time school. Yeah. Power 4, Tennessee, a small-time school. And then he's knocking the pick. And then he's like, well, this is an opportunity for the Lakers to trade for a superstar. You're knocking the guy, and then you're saying he could be in a package with Austin Reeves for a superstar? It's contradiction, Paul Pierce. This his nickname was The Truth. There's nothing truthful anymore about Paul Pierce.
No, he's
nothing.
Just, he's constantly, now he's switched networks. He's just he's constantly hot takey, and his takes are just awful.
I just don't think he's informed.
I mean, he and KG get into some pretty heated discussions where I'm just like, he's kind of clueless. But, yeah, this one is ridiculous on so many fronts that you pointed out. Like, I'm listening to this going, Tennessee is a small program with Rick Barnes?
That's where you can tell he's not clued in at all. Because Tennessee has been a good program.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like Rick Barnes, but they've been a good program. They're in the tournament basically every year. They're winning tournament games. You can't call them a small-time school.
Yeah.
And Dalton Connect's not – trading Dalton Connect is not getting you a superstar.
No.
Especially if you think he's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're dogging him. You're dogging him. He's trash. I'll trade you for the best player in the NBA. What? What are you doing?
Why don't you like Rick Barnes? Because you fired him, right?
Yeah, because he never beat a seed higher than him at Texas in the tournament.
He got you Kevin Durant. He got you three pretty good guys.
Durant got knocked out in the second round that year by USC and OJ Mayo.
That's right. That was a good game.
It was a
DJ Augustine, Kevin Durant. Yeah. I had high hopes for that team.
LaMarcus, was he? Rick Barnes had LaMarcus at Texas.
He had good players.
Right? Yeah,
all one and done, basically. And they never beat a higher seeded team or a better seeded team, however you want to phrase it, while he was there.
Did he ever lose to a lower seeded team?
Multiple times.
Yeah.
He was not good in the 8-9 matchup.
He recovered quickly at Tennessee.
He did.
Jake Paul. I don't know what to make of this. Jake Paul said, I believe I could beat Mike Tyson during any phase of any part of his career. Like, obviously that's a bad take, but I also think this is part of the Jake Paul mystique. Like, you say these crazy things. Why? So people talk about you. So you're in the news cycle. He's absolutely engagement
farming. He's the conductor of the hype train.
So, like, I feel like an idiot for putting him on Bad Take Boulevard because now I'm condoning this trolling behavior.
No, I understand that because it seems like the whole thing was a marketing stunt.
That's his career.
Yeah.
His career is a marketing stunt.
You make a statement
stunt.
Like that, and then if Brian and I get too technical down in the weeds and start breaking it down, it's like, okay, you're going to make Tyson use, you know, big gloves and have rules that he can't throw uppercuts and
his whole career
stuff.
His whole career is a marketing stunt, but he's a billionaire. Like, it's kind of genius.
It is crazy.
I kind of have to. I hate that you're making a mockery of boxing, but in terms of like having a nice hustle, I kind of admire it. A Deadspin. Braves made a trade for a pitcher in the offseason. Remember who that pitcher was?
Chris Sale.
Did he win the Cy Young?
He did.
He won the NL Cy Young. The headline from Deadspin, which has been dead forever, Atlanta Braves acquire washed-up pitcher. Who then does what? Wins the National League Cy Young.
You just made the list.
Make the list, Deadspin. I'm surprised they still exist, too, by the way. They traded Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale. NL Cy Young.
How'd that work out?
Great.
Worked out pretty damn good.
Although they missed... No, they made the playoffs. But then they lost in the wild card round, right? Kurt Benkert. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Benkert is right.
Chargers are taking my spot as worst team in the NFL this season. Then it's... the Patriots, then Saints. Wouldn't be shocked to see Herbert gets traded in a full reset in L.A. in the next 2 years. He has since deleted this tweet, which is the softest thing about this.
Yes.
It's a bad take. Yes, you made the list.
You just made the list!
But I appreciate bad takes because, look, you have a hot take at the time. It didn't materialize. It happens to the best of us. Trust me, I know. But then to go and delete the tweet, that's soft.
As if the internet doesn't remember?
Yeah. Like, I can live with somebody having a bad take. Everybody's going to have a bad take in life. It happens. We're human. We're not AI robots. We're all going to have bad takes. But you can't delete them. You have to own it. You have to embrace it. You have to take responsibility on it.
Kirk Baker was the former backup quarterback for the Packers.
He was a quarterback? He looks like a linebacker.
Yeah, he was a former. Well, he played in college, obviously, and he was a backup in the pros for a few years.
Jarrett Bailey on Bo Nix. Bo Nix will be a very good UFL quarterback in a couple of years. Jarrett Bailey, you make the list. Bo Nix.
You just made the list.
Really good.
Yeah, a little context to this because you can't see what the thread below it, but he, Jarrett Bailey said, I can't remember which quarterback he was propping up. I think it was Drake May about being the best quarterback in this year's draft. And someone replied, Bo Nix? Like, could Bo Nix be the best quarterback? And then that got the reply that you read. Bo Nix will be a very good UFL quarterback in a couple years.
I like Bo Nix. I like Bo Nix.
I got to give Sean Payton for props there, too. Because a lot of people were like, you're moving up for him. And some people were questioning, is he a first-round talent? And, boy, he is.
Yeah, he was the last of the six quarterbacks taken in the first round.
Sean Payton might be able to coach a little bit.
He might be able to coach a little bit,
Sean Payton. Daniel Jeremiah, Joe Douglas took a team with minimal talent and depth, and he's built a playoff-caliber team capable of overcoming injuries to several of their top players. Future is incredibly bright for the Jets, said Daniel Jeremiah on November 6, 2022. They have been perhaps the most dysfunctional organization in football since Daniel Jeremiah sent that tweet.
And they had the injuries, and they had everything.
And they did not overcome.
They did not overcome any of them.
Daniel Jeremiah.
You just made the list.
Now, Daniel Jeremiah was the guy who predicted that the Texans were going to trade up to number 3 for Will Anderson.
Oh, he was?
He nailed. He nailed Stroud going number 2, and then he nailed that the Texans were going to trade up to number 3. Like, which...
That's Lance's.
That's an unbelievable...
It's pretty good.
Unbelievable that he was able to nail that. Zach Rosenblatt. Daniel Jones certainly still has a lot to prove, but I think it's safe to say he's a lot better than Jalen Hurts.
Mm.
That went on October 14th of 2021.
Yeah, that's
you just made the list!
Yeah.
I was critical of Jalen as well.
Daniel Jones is a great, great QB3 on a best ball team because he's going to have 1 or 2 weeks where he puts together 4 touchdowns and his QB1 1 week every NFL season. I am upset that he got to...
I think there's any chance in new scenery, fresh start, he is
a better
quarterback?
I don't think so. I think Dable's a good offensive coach. I think Dable's like one of the best coaches for him, actually.
I'm interested. I believe that he has ability.
I don't know.
Dable's a really good offensive coach.
We'll see.
It's been 4 years now.
Now, I'm not saying he's better than Jalen Hurts. I just think he has, like, you see signs where you say he's got ability.
I think he has athletic ability. I don't think he has quarterback know-how.
Fair.
Yeah. If Kurt Cignetti is smart, Indiana will forfeit against Ohio State on Saturday. That's from Ohio's Tate on Barstool. Now, Joey Galloway also had the one where they wanted to bench. He wants to bench the Indiana quarterback.
You want
to
play that audio?
Yeah, let's play.
I'll get it ready.
Yeah, Joey Galloway saying that he wanted to bench the Indiana quarterback. That way they could play for the playoff. Which,
so that they don't end up like Florida State.
I mean, he kind of has a point.
Because, I mean, he makes the comparison. Florida State was undefeated, and they lose their quarterback, so they lose the berth in the playoffs.
Here's what he said.
But if I'm Indiana, I am protecting my quarterback.
You can't do that.
Why can you not do that?
You can't do
that.
Why? That's a culture killer. That's a culture.
Because what?
That's a culture killer.
That plus if you...
Did you hear Reese a second ago saying they've lost more games than anybody? They have a chance to get in the playoff, and it looks like they're getting in. The only argument, and we said the same thing last year, Jordan Travis got hurt for Florida State. They didn't get in. If I'm Indiana, say what you want. I'm protecting my quarterback.
But if you're Indiana, you can't go out and lose by 30 points. If they don't play him...
I am...
You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't be serious. Look, look at me, Reese.
They're
Indiana.
Like, I, if you don't do that, you're probably a playoff team. So, like, I think Joey Galloway's looking, like, super big picture. But at the same time, if this was Michigan, he would never have suggested that.
No, and because of the fact that you, to the point that everybody else is making is, you could do it, get away with it, and make the playoff, but you lose your entire locker room because the entire locker room is believing that they're good enough to play with Ohio State, and you're putting them behind the eight ball before they've kicked the ball off.
And yeah. Here's the other thing. They're 10-0, so that's not Ohio State's not the last game of their regular season. So, I mean, he's still going to have to play quarterback again before the playoffs where he'd have the same chance of getting hurt.
It's also a defeatist mentality because, like, Indiana could win the Big Ten. You beat Ohio State, you get to the Big Ten championship game,
and you get a bye.
Might even be able to get a top two seed.
It's basically telling your team, hey, just making the playoff is good enough, not winning the Big Ten, not doing things that your school hasn't done maybe ever or for decades. That's ridiculous.
That's it's a bad take, Joey. And because of that, you made the list.
You just made the list!
What's your biggest concern for the Astros offseason? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What is your biggest concern for the Astros offseason? 713-780-ESPN. Blankers, what is your biggest concern?
I think it's twofold. I think that you lose Bregman, and then you're not willing to spend at all to try and reallocate or replace whatever you're losing from Alex Bregman, whether it's another third baseman or not. If it's getting a bat in the outfield and an extra pitcher, or the things that we do every year and we say, hey, there are some holes to fill. You could do this, you could do that. If you do nothing and you let Alex Bregman walk and then you basically just are admitting that you're going to be who you are or less than you were a year ago, that would be extremely disappointing to me.
What if you pay Bregman $250 million for 10 years?
Well, that's stupidity.
I think there's a scenario in which bringing Bregman back is the bigger concern.
But I said you can lose Bregman, but then you don't do anything else.
But what if you only bring Bregman back?
Then I would hope that they can stay consistent with what they've done in terms of not going more than four, maybe they'll go five, but no more than five and no more than 30 a year.
Yeah, see, look, I think that the Astros have had two really bad off seasons in a row, and I think it's a direct correlation from moving on from your general manager and James Click. They should have kept Click. They fired Click immediately after they won the World Series, and they've had two terrible off seasons in a row. They haven't added to the team in terms of, like, depth. What they've done is they went big game hunting and signed players to these terrible contracts. Two off seasons ago, they signed Jose Abreu to such a bad contract that they had to cut bait on it halfway through it. Halfway through it, they had to cut their big free agent acquisition. That is bad general managing.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
Rafael Montero. They basically quit on that. The only reason they didn't quit on that is because he accepted an assignment to AAA and he's still on the roster. So you signed Jose Abreu to $18.5 million per year for 3 years, cut bait halfway through it. Rafael Montero was, what, $11.5 million a year for 3 years? You basically cut bait halfway through it, wasn't on the big league roster, wasn't even a September call-up because he was so bad. And then you also signed Michael Brantley to a one-year deal. Doesn't cost you long-term because it was a one-year deal, and then he played about a dozen games for you that season and a few postseason games. What did you do last offseason? Instead of, like, okay, we need a left-handed bat, we need a little bit of depth here, we could use a relief pitcher arm. You don't do any of that with the exception of just signing the biggest reliever out on the market and signing Josh Hader to a $95 million deal for 5 years and then didn't live up to that cost. I like Josh Hader. Josh Hader's performance didn't live up to his salary last year. You've had two terrible off seasons in a row. Good teams are going out there and finding shrewd free agent pickups for not tons of money, not long term, so they don't handcuff you in the future. Like, the Astros are handcuffed right now because they're paying $18.5 million to Abreu for another year. They're paying $11.5 million to Montero for another year. They're still paying Josh Hader, what is it, $19 million? Mm-hmm. The Ryan Pressly contract was actually a James Click contract, but thank goodness that's in the final year of the deal, too. The Astros are being handcuffed with these bad contracts, and the new regime is the biggest reason why, and it's Crane. It's Jim Crane playing general manager and acting like a true value Jerry Jones, quite frankly. I think that they've had two awful off seasons in a row, bad off seasons back to back, whenever they didn't have they didn't have Dana Brown two off seasons ago. They hired him after the off season. Last year they had him but didn't really do anything other than sign Josh Hader. My biggest concern is that they have that same type of off season where if they do sign a guy, It's for way higher than he should be signed for, and then you do nothing else to help the team. Because last year wasn't a problem of, like, we don't have these big names or, like, these guys that we can count on. Last year's problem was that you weren't deep. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't go to a good left-handed bat in the outfield because you didn't have one, and you're claiming Ben Hamill and Jason Hayward, who are in the twilights of their career. You didn't have a great plan B at first base, even though Jose Abreu was awful 2 years ago. Like, they didn't add the depth pieces and these insurances in case things went wrong, because they spend money at the top of the market and then those players don't perform to that level.
See, that's why I think it's extremely unfair that you point the finger at, not you personally, but anybody pointing the finger at Dana Brown, because I think that this is all, you know, points back to Jim Crane and the Crane gang, that no matter if you say it was just Crane by himself or it was Crane and Baggy and Reggie and you know, Enos Cabell or whoever the hell's Biggio was involved in all these things, it's when you transitioned from Click to Dana Brown, and then in Dana Brown's early stages, it was basically like, we got this, just get your feet settled in. And by the time Dana Brown got any kind of sense of control and trust and the ability to do what he wanted to do, even if we're not completely there yet, when he got more of it, it was already too late, because those three deals started a very evil spin for this team. You knew he wanted Verlander back. You gave up two top prospects to go get Justin Verlander back. Yes, you had a deal on the money, but, you know, we already know about how this farm system isn't extremely deep. You gave up those guys. That hasn't worked out well either. But to your point on the finances alone lead you to believe you got completely away of what was the Astros' way, which was, you know, we're not going over this many years. We're not going over, you know, this amount of money. We're going to stay hell-bent and staunch on the fact that we believe we have a formula that works for us. And the minute that there was any kind of an opening for Crane to get involved, he blew the roof off of it.
713-780-ESPN. What's your biggest concern for the Astros offseason? And then our very own Lance Erlein. He says he thinks the signs of the Astros run ending are obvious. Does he have points whenever he says this? It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.